I'm going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 32, Text Number 22. And the title of the chapter is Entanglement in Fruitive Activities. And Lord Kapila is speaking. He's addressing his mother, Devahuti. Way back 7 chapters ago, she asked a question, and he's still answering that question. He's giving a very comprehensive answer. 7 chapters worth so far. Her question was a good question. How to get out of Maya, basically. She had just experienced Karnam leaving. Wasn't a divorce. It was something that had been promised to Kardamamuni long ago by Devahuti's father when the marriage proposal by the father was made. Kardamamuni accepted on the condition that when there is a son who is of age to take care of your daughter, then I can return to the forest and continue my Satya Yuga meditation practice. So that is a Vedic standard, and Swami Vivekananda agreed, and sure enough, when Kapila Dev was of age to take care of his mother, and she was feeling lots of unhappy feelings. And she understood it was due to her attachment, and she understood the nature of attachment is it brings suffering. In the beginning, it looks good. It's happiness and devoted passion. In the beginning, it looks good. In the end, it's miserable. And so she appealed to Lord Kapila Dev, please remove this covering. It's your energy. She was addressing her son as the personality of Godhead because she knew he was the personality of Godhead. She knew because Lord Brahma said, even before Kapila Dev was born, Lord Brahma said, the child that's within her womb is the personality of Godhead. Even before that, Lord Vishnu, when he appeared before Karnamuni in the forest, before they were married, you have a son who's the personality of Godhead. Me, I'll appear as your son. So she knew that this is not just my son. This is the personality of God. So it's by your potency that I'm covered. Similarly, please remove that potency and set me free. What to do? How is that to be done? That's the question that opened the door for Sankhya philosophy, and it starts with devotional service, chapter 25. Her answer is, his answer to her is, as you have been attached on the material plane, become attached to a sadhu on the spiritual plane. That's the release button. That's the doorway. That's the procedure, the process of getting out of the clutches of illusion and material conception, and to establish a spiritual conception is through sadhu sangha. There's a whole chapter describing it. where the sadhu is, how to associate with the sadhu, with the message of the sadhu, and what flows from the tradition is, and so on. And so many other things in so many chapters. But the Sankhya philosophy, if one doesn't do that, then there's the entanglement. And it describes that entanglement in layers and layers and layers, starting with the details of the elements on the unfolding, the process of the unfolding of the elements, because prompted by the living entity desiring material enjoyment. So the field of activities from material enjoyment is laid out by first the Supreme Lord and then Lord Brahma puts it all together so that there's this field of enjoyment. But when one has that field of enjoyment, one has the desire to enjoy and the field to enjoy in, one becomes entangled. But the previous chapter was the movement of the living entity within the womb of the mother. And you know, before that and then after that, after the child is born, the progressive stages up through, you know, and into adult life. The conclusion of that chapter was, it's a bad bargain. Don't buy one. That's not how he expresses it. Here's two verses, last two verses of the previous chapter, the movements of living entities. Therefore, one should not view death with horror, nor have recourse to defining the body as soul, nor give way to exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. Realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should move about in the world, free from attachment, and steadfast in purpose. And then the final verse, endowed with right vision, and strengthened by devotional service, and a pessimistic attitude towards material identity, one should relegate the body to this illusory world, to his reason, thus one can be unconcerned with the material world. Do one's duties, this is emphasized in this chapter, do one's duties as duty with detachment. Recognizing I'm in this circumstance because I bought one. I bought a bad bargain. And while in this embodied state, let me perform the duties that are appropriate for my psychophysical nature with detachment from being the enjoyer of that, the fruits of those activities. But then this chapter is describing there are those that don't. In fact, not only they don't, they have only one interest. Or one of the verses that I just discussed is called Trivargika. Trivargika. They're interested in dharma, artha, and kama. Forget moksha. They're not interested. Offer them moksha. No. I want to enjoy. What's liberation? What does that tend to mean anything to me? I'm not interested. I'm interested in kama. And to get kama, I need artha. To get artha, I'm selfish and dharma. So I can get prosperity so that I can enjoy it. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, there are those that say, there's nothing more than this. And they say it. And that there's their conviction. So in this chapter, he's Kapila Dev is making a compare-contrast kind of thing, where from the very the first verse, he describes the Grihamedis, and then he describes the Grihasthas. And the Grihamedis is the former Trivargika personalities. And to them, that's on the one hand, that, you know, that's good. It's good as far as you can get. And their interest is accumulating piety so that I have the fruits of piety so that I can enjoy in this life and I get upgraded in the next life. That's the program. In the bodily conception of life, I am mine. Without mentioning where, there's a teenage girl in one of our congregations somewhere in America, and she was just entering into college. She wanted to live at home, so she enrolled in a small Catholic college, thinking, you know, the social norms will be nicer than another place. So she enrolled, was accepted. It's not a track for getting a medical degree. That's her vision presently. And all entering freshmen must take a Bible study class. So she was describing the Bible study professor. And she was appreciating both his quality and the words that he spoke. The words that he spoke sounded very much like what she hears at the temple. Serving God and dedicating all things to God's service. And, you know, nice, very familiar sounding things. And then the part that she didn't get was when he started speaking about what happens afterwards. And what happens afterwards is you go to heaven and your whole family will be there and Fido will be there and, you know, the turkey on the table will be there and everything's going to be there. And she thought, that doesn't sound right. In her words, that sounds like sense gratification. And what about, you know, if that's the same as this, then why read that? You know, just accept this. Isn't there any difference? And so she started discussing with the Bible study professor, and she became more concerned or a little frustrated, seeing the distinction between if there isn't just before coming here, I was in Boston, and the evening was Thursday evening. There's a program at MIT. There was a very lively discussion with one of the students at MIT who was saying, you don't need a goal. I was saying, you need a goal. So we had a lively discussion. You have to know where you're going so that you can get there. You may not know what that experience is, but so his argument was, well, you just live life and the goal becomes identified by living life. And, you know, that may be what your experience is. That's what life is. You just live life and the goal becomes identified. But doesn't it keep changing? And how do you know when you got there? Because something that Prabhupada taught is, well, based on the Bhagavatam, Natte vidu svarta katim hi vishnu. Dharashayi bahir artha maninas. If you don't have a clear sense of goal, that is to satisfy the personality of God, even you have the platitude that says, serve God. What is that? If you don't know what that is, it's going to be a projection of what this is minus the unwanted part. Right? Neti neti. It's not this, it's not this. It's the nice part. I like my family. I like Fido. I like the turkey on the table. So it's just without the unwanted part. If you don't have, so how are you going to get a clear sense of goal if you don't have, if you don't take shelter in shabda pramana, spiritual sound vibration? Then you're going to imagine the goal is this and live life and think, okay, that says that's some clue about what the goal is, and the ascending process of figuring out what the goal is without knowing ahead of time what the goal is. So as you, if you follow that process, this was our dialogue, then you're learning something all the while, even greater clarity what the goal is becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. But even when you don't know exactly from experience what the goal is, you know what the goal is. Prema bhakti. Love of God. And I don't know what that is. I haven't experienced it. At least I don't recall experiencing it in this lifetime anyway. So what it is, I'm not really... But I know that resonates. Let me do things that help me get there. As Prabhupada's words, if you have a clear understanding of what the goal is, then it's easy to take steps towards the goal. If you don't know what the goal is, good luck. I shared with him, there was a friend during my college days, and he had a little sports car, he liked going for rides, and I asked him, when you go for rides, where do you go? He said, just go for a ride. And you know, and that's life. Just life is an adventure. Life is searching. Prabhupada had a discussion with one professor that was giving that argument. An educator saying, you know, life is a big experiment. You try this out, you try that out. It's a big adventure. And he was from Eastern Europe, at least it sounded like that from his accent. I said, you probably don't know this little jingle, but when I was, like a nursery rhyme, when I was a child, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Okay. You know that one? Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Doesn't matter. Just row your boat gently down the stream. Because, you know, where is the stream going? Doesn't matter. Just row your boat. Just live your life. And at the end of life, you know, you don't know anything more about what life is than when you started. I can't live my life like that. I don't want to be at the end of the conveyor belt of life and still don't know who I am and what's what and what is the purpose of this thing? The human form of life? Just row your boat? So, Kapila Dev is expressing to Devahuti, there is a goal. And those that don't know that goal, they accept something else. And even those people that are very religious, he goes through this whole thing of describing even perfected yogis and the Kumaras and Lord Brahma, and what their destination is. It depends sometimes, it's very, there's no explanation of exactly what, but it's to the degree, the point that's being made is to the degree that there's still some expectation of finding happiness within this realm. Even when they enter after the conclusion, the winding up of creation, the two pararthas, the life of Lord Brahma, and everything is wound back up into the body of Mahavishnu, one can take birth again in similar form and just resume where one left off. In such an elevated position. So now that's the background for this morning's verse. Therefore, my dear mother, I advise that you take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for his lotus feet are worth worshipping. Accept this with all devotion and love, for thus you can be situated in transcendental devotional service. I'm going to read the purport. It's three paragraphs. Short. The word Parameshtinam in the verse. Parameshtinam is sometimes used in connection with Lord Brahma. Parameshti means the Supreme Person. As Brahma is the Supreme Person within this universe, Krishna is the Supreme Personality in the spiritual world. Lord Kapila advises his mother that she should take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, because it is worthwhile. Compare and contrast. The other has its problems. And this is worthwhile. Taking shelter of demigods, even those in the highest positions, like Brahma and Lord Shiva, is not advised herein. One should take shelter of the Supreme Godhead. You don't have the advantage, and I don't have the time, to go through all of the details of this other the previous verses, but he describes the impersonalist, he describes the transcendentalist yogi, he describes the demigod worshipper, he describes the various categories of Brihamedis that don't know what the goal of life is, and the consequences, and in detail. So the same message we know is there in Bhagavad Gita. Specific to the object of worship. In the 7th chapter, in the 9th chapter, again in the Modes of Nature chapter, the Visions of Faith chapter. According to the Modes of Nature, in the Divisions of Faith chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks, if people don't have faith in you or your words, don't they have faith in something? And the answer is yes, they have faith in something, because faith is intrinsic to the soul. Faith in Krishna is intrinsic to the soul. If someone doesn't have faith in Krishna, then they have faith according to the modes of nature. And according to their faith, they worship, because worship is also intrinsic for the soul. It is pure state. That's what souls do. They worship Krishna, they love Krishna, they engage in Krishna's service. I don't have that time. Yeah, 6 minutes before? Yeah. Eight, seven?
Five minutes before? Or eight.
Huh?
5 minutes to eight.
Okay. That's So in this compare and contrast, things that are going on earlier in this chapter, specifically in this chapter, Kapila Deva is giving principles in detail about different mindsets, different kinds of consciousness, and because of that, different consequences, but not the eternal position. Mamopecha tu kaunteya purnar janma davidyate, in the language of the Bhagavad Gita. One should aspire from that place. Abrahma bhuvanal loka purnar arvartanurjana. From the highest planet, Lord Brahma, down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But there's another option. And that's the option that Kapila Deva is putting forward in this verse and overall in his teachings. One should take shelter of the Supreme Godhead. Next paragraph. Sarva bhavina means in all loving ecstasy. All hyphen loving ecstasy. Sarva bhavina. Bhava is the preliminary stage of elevation before the attainment of pure love of Godhead. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Buddha Bhava Samandita. When it was attained the stage of Bhava, can accept the lotus feet of Lord Krishna as worshipable. The word Bhava has a range of meanings depending upon the context. Bhava, just like Ishwara Bhav, it means a state of mind, a mental inclination. That's not ecstasy. It's just someone has a nature of being a controller. Ishwara Bhav. Like kings. I mean, most of us, we have, Ishwara Bhav. We like to control somebody or something. And some have real big ones with big desires to control. So, bhava can mean that. So I've always wondered, is that a proper understanding? This is from Bhagavad Gita 10.8, the first of the chapter sloki verses, where Krishna is declaring to Arjuna that he's the source of everything. Who knows the verse, 10.8, Bhagavad Gita? Aham sarvasya kabhavo tasak sarvam bharatate iti mahatmante bhuta bhava samanika. Okay, so that's one of the ones the kids learned, right? They recited last night? So Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. Everything comes from me. I'm the source of everything. Like backwards and forwards, saying the same thing. Everything comes from me, I'm the source of everything. Iti matva, thus knowing. Bhajante ma, they engage in my devotional service. And when one engages in devotional service, understanding that Krishna is everything. Buddha, intelligent. Bhava, samandita, in sequence. One is engaged in bodhi yoga, another is engaged in bhava bhakti. In sequence, naturally. So, Kapila Dev is encouraging Devahuti, same way. It's just an expanded version of the Bhagavad Gita's message, same message. Engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by so doing, you'll experience ecstasy. Besides, not suffering from material attachment, you'll experience ecstasy. Which would you rather have? Suffering from material attachment or ecstasy? It's not a difficult choice. But letting go of material attachment, that's the hard part. But if one understands clearly the problems connected, and that's what he's been doing. That's driving entanglement in fruitive activities. It's deeply problematic. It's by design. Dukkhavayam shashvatam. It's designed to bring dukkha. So don't buy one. Buy the other one. Invest your consciousness in sarva-bhavena, the path of ever-increasing ecstasy. This is also advised here by Lord Krishna, like Lord Kapila, to his mother. Also significant in this verse is the phrase tad gunashrayaya bhaktya. This means that discharging devotional service unto Krishna is transcendental. It's not material activity. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Those who engage in devotional service are accepted to be situated in the spiritual kingdom. Brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Once they become situated in the transcendental, they at once become situated in the transcendental kingdom. In many places, Krishna says similarly, you'll be with me. You'll abide in me. You'll remain with me ever, forever. Engage your mind and always thinking of me. Engage your intelligence in me. And you'll abide in me always, without a doubt. It's not sometime later. It's presently. If we can fix our mind upon Krishna and engage spiritual, but by spiritual intelligence, all our activity in Him, we're in the spiritual world. That place becomes Vaikuntha. Once Prabhupada was asked by a reporter, Swamiji, your movement is growing so fast. Maybe one day the whole world will become Krishna conscious. What would is that possible, Swamiji? He said, don't worry, it won't happen. Then he said, but if it were to happen, then this place would become my God. Last paragraph. Devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is the only means for attaining the highest perfection of life for the human being. This is recommended herein by Lord Kapila to his mother. Bhakti is therefore nirguna, free from all tinges of material qualities, although the discharge of devotional service appears to be like material activities, it is never saguna, or contaminated by material qualities. Tad gunashrayaya means that Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities are so sublime that there is no need to divert one's attention to any other activities. His behavior with the devotees is so exalted that a devotee need not try to divert his attention to any other worship. It is said that the demoniac Putana came to kill Krishna by poisoning him. But because Krishna was pleased to suck her breast, she was given the same position as his mother. Devotees pray, therefore, that if a demon who wanted to kill Krishna gets such an exalted position, why should they go to anyone other than Krishna for their worshipful attachment? That's Uddhava, the first chapter of this canto. There are two kinds of religious activities, one for material advancement and the other for spiritual advancement. By taking shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna, one is endowed with both kinds of prosperity, material and spiritual. Why then should one go to any demigod? This verse is similar to a previous one. where he uses computer speech to Deva Bhuti, but going directly. Then after that, it was all this indirect thing. Now he's saying it directly. Here's the previous. Therefore, my dear mother, by devotional service, take direct shelter of the Supreme Personality Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart. Now he's saying it again in this text 22. Commonly, when one hears the name Lord Kapila or Lord Kapila Deva, one thinks of Sankhya philosophy. He's the propounder of Sankhya philosophy. And commonly, when you think of Sankhya philosophy, what do you think of? This very complex system. Material elements and how they evolve, the senses, the sense objects, and it's high technology. It's, whoa, way up there. But as you can see, it's not just this high technology stuff of material elements and how they fit together, and then aside from that is the soul. That has its purpose. The purpose is, if you want to build a universe, here's how you can do one. Build a universe. Or just some little part of a universe. Build some technology thing. If scientists studied Sankhya philosophy, they could make all kinds of inventions. Because the push and pull, cause and effect of elements and their unfolding, it's all laid out. You know, Professor Kapila Deva is explaining it. You just have to sit and take his class and understand the message. But the purpose that Kapila Deva is presenting is to understand, apart from that, there is the soul. And one who becomes entangled in the complexities of the material field, whether it's pious or impious, virtuous or sinful, the complexity is going to bind that living entity into, he can become entangled in fruitive activities. As long as there's this expectation of happiness apart from Krishna, it's Maya. It's one of the chapter sloki verses in the previous canto. One who thinks that this is one of the chapter sloki verses, one who thinks that there is intrinsic value in something that has no connection with the Supreme, know that to be my illusory energy. In fact, there's nothing that does exist apart from the Supreme, not to speak of having its own intrinsic value. But one who thinks that way, that's due to the influence of Maya. That is Maya. And as long as one's in Maya, you're going to think Maya thoughts. Like, let me enjoy. This way, that way, the other way, unlimited varieties of ways, Maya is Krishna. So what Kapila Deva is doing is let Krishna come into proper focus, or the Personality of Godhead in his shelter, take proper focus of attention there. And then, Purnarjanma Nividyate, the entanglement in the unwanted part, that will be accomplished. And it's not going to look like it does here. Family and Fido and the turkey on the table. It's not, it's different. Can't project this into that. It's different. It's the other way around. That's flawless, and this is the perverted reflection. You don't try to understand what's the unperverted reality just by studying the perverted reflection. It gives you some idea. There's personality, there's relationships, there's love. There's activity. There's variegatedness. But the nature of that is to be understood by this, the goal. Taking shelter of the Personality of Godhead in mood of loving service. Okay, that's the goal. I'm not there. Let me take steps to get there. And that's what sadhana, bhakti is. Steps to get there. The impetus is, that's the goal. So he's going to provide her with sadhana later. The sadhana of fixing the mind upon the personality of God. If this is the background of why it's necessary to do so, and the consequences if you don't. And back to chapter 25, it's the sadhu, in this case it's him, he's the sadhu with whom Devahuti is associated. He's the personality of Godhead, their son. But he's providing that understanding, and through such association and following the instructions from that association, that's the path. That's how you get there, to the goal. But if you don't have a clear intention of getting to the goal, who's going to stay on the path? You get distracted like anything. Okay. So any discussion? Comments?
Yeah. I have a question about something not directly related to you. I was wondering how I could become the master of my mind.
Whoa. By accepting the position that Krishna is your master. Here's a very simple way to say the same thing. It's a multiple choice question with two options. Which is going to be more effective? A, your effort, or B, your effort but plus Krishna's help? It's easy. Math is easy. So how do you get Krishna's help? You accept Krishna's master. It's very easy to understand. You approach someone where you say, I don't care about you. I mean, you could exist or not exist. It really doesn't have any consequence to me at all. Or you say to someone, you're very important to me. And my relationship with you is something that's very important to me. Now, the energetically, that person is going to respond accordingly. Okay, you don't care about me, and I'm not going to interfere. You care? Let's try to work something together. Yayatam mam prapadyante, Krishna says, as they surrender, prapadyante means surrender, as they surrender to me, I reciprocate or reward them accordingly. So if I want to be the master of my mind, actually, it's one of Krishna's energies. Devahuti did this. Krishna, or Kapila, you are the controller of your energies. You've placed this energy of yours, my mind, in a situation where it's always disturbed. But you can change that because you're the master of your energies. So, I want that situation where I'm the master of my mind, but it's not happening in my own effort. I need your help. And not just, in a utilitarian way. Please come and help me. Oh, thanks a lot. See you later. But in a relationship that's a lasting one, a loving relationship, and when that loving relationship is manifest, it's vibrant, then that which you just described, becoming the master of the mind, it's in your grip. Because it's Krishna's energy, and he's existing. So how to come to that position besides wanting to be the master of my mind? How to come to that position where I accept Krishna as my master? Hearing about him. There's a song from somewhere in my past, to know him is to above him, and I do. One of those songs. So when you learn about Krishna, it's natural to love him. And when you love someone, the connection is strong. So come to hear more about Krishna. Hear from Krishna, or hear from those who are intimately connected to Krishna so they know Krishna. And hear about Krishna from Krishna, or from those who love Krishna or know him. And then that love for Krishna will manifest. And then the capacity to be the master of the mind becomes possible. Otherwise, what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the mind can be either one of two things: best friend, greatest enemy. The unbridled mind is the greatest enemy. So what's the bridled mind? It's under the care of someone greater than me. Like, you know, the horse and the bridle. It's the connecting, submitting myself to the loving relation and loving control, that because through love one is controlled. My lower nature is controlled by love, more so than the arm wrestling program. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. That takes some cultivation to be able to fully take shelter of Krishna, and by Krishna's mercy, that the control of the mind becomes not only possible, but it just happens naturally.
That we understand the goal is prema bhakti, but we also told different other things, that in the process you will get free from sufferings and you become happy. So what's the goal is one thing, but at the same time there's also this motive. So when we hear such things that say Krishna, you get free from all sufferings, so what should we take on this? And when you hear that, you prema bhakti means loving relationship with Krishna, and more of servant of servant. So is it all right to hanker for such a kind of a genuine relationship? Or is it also kind of, is service the goal, or is a kind of relationship you have in the services that are going?
What's the difference between service and relationship?
Well, it's like
think on the absolute plane for a moment. What's the difference between service and relationship? There are different ways of describing the same thing. You know, look at it this way, look at it that way, but it's the same thing. When there's a loving relationship, there's service. When there's loving service, there's a relationship. You know, the unifying factor is the mood of love. What's the relationship with this mood of service? What service where there's no relationship? There's the object of service, the servitor, and the medium of service. The lover and the beloved and the exchange of love. Relationship. Loving relationship. The medium of that is service. Varieties of service, of different flavors, different mellows of love. But service, that's the medium. So, the earlier part of what you were saying was there's the goal and then there's these perks. And we, you know, we may be motivated by those perks. That seemed to be what you were speaking about at the beginning.
So how do we treat those perks? Is it all right to...
Just be realistic about what your consciousness is. Be realistic about what your consciousness is, the state of consciousness. Here's the goal, and I'm here. And these things are attractive to me. Now, I understand from our teachings, having attained that, this is inconsequential. But right now, I'm here. So, let me be honest about recognizing where I am. Strive for the goal, and connect these things to the goal. I can pray to the Supreme Lord, and may that day come when I have, you know, please free my heart from such desires. Right now I have such desires. I don't like to suffer, but lo and behold, suffering comes. There's pain in the body, and things happen. There are things out there that happen. Mind becomes... But that's because of my contaminated state. If I wasn't in a contaminated state, those things, I wouldn't even identify with it. I'd be so, but I'm not, you know, so absorbed in love for Krishna, I would be inconsequential. But right now they're consequential. So let me not lose sight of the goal. That's the starting point. And be honest with what my position is. Here's another way of saying the same thing. In one lecture, Prabhupada was describing, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke very high. Nandanam, Najanam, Nasundari, Bhavatam, Jagadishakam. Mama Jamani, Jamadishay, Bhavatad Bhakti Rahai Taki Twayi. Birth after birth. Let me just simply be engaged in devotional service. That's Lord Chaitanya's teaching. It's very high. For us that are in this stage of practice, it's good to desire to be with Krishna, to go back to Godhead. It's good. When you come to the stage where Lord Chaitanya is speaking from, Mama Jamani Jamanishwari, birth after birth, from our position, I want to be with Krishna.
Is that going to be pure devotional service, or just like wanting one kind of liberation? Should we, even at such a lower stage, aspire to practice pure devotional service, or is
that classic out of liberation? Yes. To aspire to practice, while at the same time recognizing this is my present situation. It's so many things, you know. How should I observe a codicil? How many rounds should I chant? How much time should I spend studying Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita? I have, you know, this thing people say balance. We're making decisions all the time. Be realistic about that which is sustainable for you, and do that. And aspire for elevating. But do be realistic. What's sustainable? Do that. Sincerely. Put your whole heart into that. A nice example that comes to mind is Niranjan Maharaj was sharing with us at a japa retreat. They had a disciple in Russia that was fantastic, sadhaka, wonderful devotee, and they had some very critical illness. And during that critical illness, they were unable to do anything, but they chant or do anything. And gradually they overcame that illness. And they had written him a letter. I'm now chanting 4 rounds and I'm becoming very enthusiastic. Now I can resume my 16 rounds soon. And so he shared with us the letter that he wrote back. And the letter that he wrote back was, your health is still weak. Your body is not yet fully strong. Don't push yourself. Rather, the 4 rounds that you're doing, chant with feeling. Because if you chant with feeling, naturally it's going to grow. So don't push yourself with numbers. But with genuine feeling, devotion, it will grow. Of its own, it will grow. So, similar idea. Do that which is sustainable with real feeling, with real, as much as you can connect to what bhakti is with that. Do that with real bhakti as much as you have. And it will grow. You will spiritually progress and your devotion will increase. Quantitatively, qualitatively, everything will increase.
Thanks so much.
Something else? Yeah?
That's nice. So, like, listening to discourses like this, it's quite an easy choice, devotional service.
Yeah.
But? Yeah. So, as an aspiring devotee, then you come to the community and try to practice. Then, as Mara has mentioned, then we come with our maturing qualities, like history vow, or as opposed to that nature of controlling, maybe rebellious nature.
So, Ishwara, I didn't say Asuri. I said Ishwara. There is another one, Asura Bhav, that's another one.
Yeah, that nature of controlling or rebellion nature. So
okay.
How do we deal with that? Because that really beats our progress.
Okay. Here's the pan scale. There's Ishwara Bhav over here. Now what do I do about it? Put something on the other side of the pan scale. What's that? Instead of trying to control others or circumstances, let me take the position of being the servant of others. Or the circumstance Krishna has put me in. That's the circumstance Krishna has put me in. I accept it. From that position, let me serve. If Krishna wants to change the circumstance, certainly Krishna can change the circumstance and nobody can stop him. So, something on the other side of the pan scale. And back to this just previous example. Okay, that's easier said than done. I have this strong Ishwara Bhav. It's like saying, you know, I have anger. What do I do about anger? Bhishma Dev says, you practice forgiveness. Yeah, but, you know, this person really makes me angry. Or this circumstance really makes me angry. Okay, put something on the other, to your capacity, put something on the other side of the pen scale. Practice forgiveness. And there are further things to say about practicing forgiveness, but as far as control, face the reality, you're not the controller. That's another, you know, knowledge. What are you controlling? You're a controller. Your little ability to control is controlled. And that little ability can be taken like that. But who's the controller? So take the position of the servant. It is that reality. Besides, it's liberating from the misconception of being the controller. It's reality. And reality is happiness. And then you can be peaceful. And without peaceful, how you can be happy? Krishna gives that argument. Trying to be the controller doesn't allow the mind to be peaceful. I always have to be controlling. But I want to be happy. I can't be happy unless I'm peaceful. So let go of that misconception. It's the same thing as what he's saying. Such a nice verse. I'll read it again. Endowed with right vision and strengthened by devotional service. So that there's some vision. And strengthened by devotional service, that means live your life accordingly. In the mood of, I am Krishna's servant. And here's how Krishna wants you to serve. So that I serve how Krishna wants you to serve. And that gives strength to the vision. And pessimistic, endowed with a pessimistic attitude towards material identity, the foundation of Ishvara Bhav is I'm separate. Very simple definition of the distinction between matter and spirit is spirit is seeing things in relation to Krishna, material is not seeing things in relation to Krishna. Seeing things is separate from Krishna. That's material. Because what's material? Well, if I see something in relation to Krishna, I can use it in Krishna's service. It has a spiritual value. You can read Prabhupada's books with my reading glasses, so much better than with other ones. So, pessimistic attitude towards material identity, thinking of myself as separate. It's not pessimistic. Prabhupada said it different, similar but different than what Kapila said. He said a devotee is optimistic about devotional life and pessimistic about material life. Or here this pessimistic about material identity. The program of trying to become happy by an existence separate from the Supreme. I'm not very optimistic and pessimistic about that. It's not going to happen. The flow of the material energy is impelling me to try to do it. That's the conditioned side. But the alternative to the conditioned side is it's not working out. You're promising me all kinds of things, but it's not working that way. The product said you're going to be happy. But I'm finding the subtext is, you know, I'm going to punch you in the face. Now, that doesn't equal happiness. I have to read the fine print. I'm not very optimistic about that product. Material happiness through Ishvara Bhav. But pessimistic and go backwards. Having a proper vision, strengthened by devotional service, pessimistic about this other alternative, the promise of enjoyment separate from Krishna as a controller. Then live your life with that attachment to the Supreme and detachment from matter, and learn life's lessons with that, within that paradigm. That's what is being offered here. Something else? Yeah.
Initially you mentioned that you mentioned about the goal, and we need to have a goal. We can get a clear sense of goal when we take shelter of Shabd Brahma.
When you do what?
Shabd Brahma.
Shabd Brahma, yeah.
So, is it like clearing of the cloud kind of thing?
Sure. Using the cloud metaphor, that's something Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does. Those clouds are anartas, or anartas are clouds. Clouds and mist that block the sun. So, clearing the clouds, anarta nivritti. Taking the right path, sadhana, bhajana kriya, followed by anarta nivritti. Clearing the clouds. Sure. You know something?
At first, what was the verse, Maharaj, that you were with the pessimistic material identity? Sorry, just...
It's the last verse of chapter 21. Excuse me, 31.
31.
So, 31... 48, last verse of the chapter.
Thank you. So my question is, so we know the goal, we know the goal, we know the means to attain the goal is service. So what is it within a devotee that makes discriminations, even after understanding that devotional service is absolute, but makes discriminations that I would rather do this than that, and shying away from opportunities that could be very helpful to their devotional service?
It's a number of things, but the heading is anartha. What Bhaktivinoda Thakur analyzes in Harinam Chintamani, a little different than what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does. The clouds, he doesn't use that metaphor. He says that they're the obstacles to light coming in fully, rather than being obscured or obfuscated, is offenses, hridaya dorbalyam, petty weakness of heart. I know better, but I just don't do it. And then another is asat trishna, thirst for the impermanent. The bungee cord. The being drawn back to the addiction of finding happiness through sense gratification. I don't want to let go of that. Now, my intelligence is convinced about the high road, but my conditioned nature is it's drawing me back. That's that Krishna. I know better, but I don't do it. That's what Krishna says to Arjuna about the Gita. Arjuna, what's happening? You know better. Why are you carrying on like this? Then the other is offenses, because those that impede doing what you know you should do.
So the Hridaya Dorbalyam part, the weakness of heart, that's primarily addressed by chanting to strengthen.
Well, it's also taking, you could say it one way, opening the heart and receiving the fullness of mercy, or say it the other way, getting a boot in the seat of the pants. And in part, That comes from the sufferings. We don't like to suffer. So, in other words, we're suffering. There are four impetuses for engaging in devotional service. One of them is suffering. So when we're suffering, we turn to God. And things get a little bit better, and then we become complacent. So then, some more suffering, the boot in the pants. So that, I better stop being complacent here. We give up temporarily the weakness of heart and do what we know we should do, because we don't want to suffer. And things become normalized again, and we slacken. Because we're still on the platform of, I want my enjoyment. Rather than, I want Krishna's enjoyment. That's a big jump. That's our teaching. And to talk about the teaching is one thing, and to stay steady on that platform is it requires purity. So we don't want purity, we want enjoyment. Or at least the absence of so much suffering. Or, turn the volume down a little bit. It was very, very, very vivid when 9/11 happened and New York became very religious. Really spiritual place. Because their safety zone was gone. Not going to happen here. This is New York. And it happened there. At every street corner, literally every street corner, in the crosswalk, New Yorkers, they don't wait for the light to change green. They just walk. If there's not a car coming, and they can run in between the cars. For about a month and a half, they stopped. Not only did they stop, but they set up little altars, a place of worship, at this side and that side of every crosswalk. A little shrine, a Buddhist something, Hindu something, a Christian something, all in one on the same lamppost. And they would say their prayer before walking across the cross. Yeah, etc. And but now that's not the way it is. Back to business as usual. The suffering is an impetus. It's there because it helps us become sober. Until the pinch of the suffering is gone, and then it's business as usual. We know better, but we just don't do it. That's another option. You don't do it, you get kicked. But that's not best. It's another form of Krishna's mercy, but it's not the best form of Krishna's mercy. Best form of Krishna's mercy, we recognize there is this tendency for I know what to do and I'm not doing it. But it's, don't beat yourself up because of it. It's anishtita bhakti. It's a stage of devotion where it's unsteady. Sometimes not. Unsteady. That's a stage. Keep going. That's what's important. Continue with the submission process. Continue to receive. Not just so that you're comfortable. Continue to receive so that you're transcendental. Something else? Yeah.
You were giving that example of a devotee who was, as he was recovering from illness, they were chanting four rounds, and then Maharaj suggested that they can just do it with an open heart, with a feeling.
With feeling.
And then progress from that stage. So, for most of us, we're not in a critical condition like that, but should we just, where is the balance of keep on doing what we are doing with a feeling and think, okay, this is okay, and then naturally we will progress?
Well, there may be a feeling that says it's not okay. I'm feeling insufficiency. That's a feeling. So, then serve with that feeling. I'm doing what I can, but I feel it's very insufficient. And serve with that feeling. Pick a feeling. There's so many feelings. Serve with feeling. It will, if it's done with sincerity, it'll carry you. And especially because we have proper teachings and those guiding us in those teachings. We're not just going to go off in sentimental land. We're going to be guided by these teachings and teachers. Krishna will help.
What about setting some goals to, like,
sure.
Is that, how does
sure.
that, those
that,
things...
That's a part of our topic here. And, you know, the ultimate goals and midterm goals and some realizable short-term goals.
Not just waiting for it to happen.
Of course.
But
of course.
Some planning.
Yes. 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 Yeah. That tension... The dialectic is a technical word. There should always be some in our lives, some tension. Doesn't, you know, tension doesn't sound nice. But they have this phrase, there's toxic stress and there's eustress. There's tension, it's good. It helps you go forward. And too much, it becomes a mode of ignorance. It's debilitating. But where you want to go forward, That's submission. You know, there's on my own kind, I want to be the master of my mind. It's not happening. So, let me do something that's an attainable goal and call upon Krishna's help. That's good. That's good tension, good stress. But make it realistic. When the alarm goes off, I get up. You know, there's one. Or, you know, whatever the thing is. I know that I've eaten enough, I stop. Or something. When I'm chanting the holy name, I'm consciously striving to be present with the holy name rather than an opportunity to multi-process things that concern me and that the chanting is in the background. So let me be present. So there's so many things that we can do as lifelong or short-term cultivatable steps, sure, we should have some goals. Then there's the ultimate goal. Those are to help us towards, and we should see them in terms of the ultimate goal. Yes.
It's a kind of funny question. Chanting versus listening get the same benefit?
What? Chanting what?
Chanting versus listening.
Chanting versus listening.
Listening, yeah. The same mantra.
Listening.
Yeah. We get the same benefit, like, you know.
What do you mean by that? Or what is the application you're thinking about? Let's say we're having kirtan, and someone is leading the kirtan, and we listen, and then we respond instead of listening. That's one, you know. Do we get more benefit if we listen than when we're chanting, or more benefit when we're chanting than when we're listening? And the answer is, it's the same. But then, if the application is, well, if I just listen to japa and don't chant japa, is it the same? Depends on the application. What are you considering?
I mean, like, most of the time, you know, I listen Maha Mantra, like, you know, when I'm in the office, like, I just quote that mantra and do my work.
Fantastic.
Okay.
And you're still chanting, right?
That's why.
At work, you're not chanting, but at home, are you chanting?
Not more often. That's why I'm asking.
That's why you're asking. That's what I was getting at. Both are nice. And if you continue, say, for whatever the reason is, you find it challenging to chant, but you don't find it challenging to listen. Whatever the reason is, whatever's going on. So do that. But part of doing that is purification, and from purification, some attraction, and then chanting, you know, along with hearing instructions, and the emphasis in the instructions is you should chant. Maybe chanting begins with hearing, but then you should chant. On occasion, Prabhupada would refer to the cartoon, you know, the one. The husband and wife are sitting at a table, and the wife says, chant, chant, chant. And over here, the husband says, can't, can't, can't. The same effort to say, can't, 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 you could chant. So don't resist, it's nice. But it will come in the course of time. But it's something that's instruction says chant. So chant. Even if there's not a taste, even if there's not a big attraction, chant.
His Holiness Prabhupada Swami Ki. Yeah.